Again, my name is Heather Farb, and I'm a qualitative research coordinator at the Louisiana Public Health Institute in New Orleans. And I'm going to be talking about the same topic of cessation, but we actually did a qualitative study looking specifically at factors influencing tobacco initiation and use, and also cessation among low-income African-American males in Louisiana. So I have no relationships to disclose. So nationwide, it's estimated that about 20% of African-American males are smokers. But as typical for Louisiana, we of course have a higher rate. In Louisiana, 36.5% of African-American males smoke, compared to only 27.9% of white males. But perhaps even more interesting than that is the fact that African-Americans in Louisiana have tried to quit more often than white smokers. So about 81% of African Americans in Louisiana have tried to quit, compared to only 74% of white smokers. But African Americans have a much lower rate of success. Only 12% were successful, compared to 25% of white smokers. So again, it's a huge difference. In addition, African American males in Louisiana are much less likely to use the Louisiana Tobacco Quit Line. 36.2% of callers were male, and 42% were African-American. And I think this quote from our focus groups really encapsulates a lot of what I'm going to be talking about, just the fact of, you know, racism and a whole bunch of different factors, but ultimately African-American males seem to be stuck in this cycle where they want to quit, but they can't, and it's just this, you know, really pushing against the addiction. So there haven't been very many studies that have really looked at why African-American males in Louisiana continue to have the highest rates of tobacco use, but also have like the lowest rates of using the quit line, in addition to why they have such little success with cessation efforts. So I'm going to be focusing on a few different results from our focus groups. I'm specifically looking at factors around tobacco initiation and use among low-income African-American males in Louisiana, also looking at factors that led to cessation and different cessation methods that the quitters use, and finally ending with some recommendations that the focus group participants gave us in regards to communication and messaging for African-American males that are trying to quit smoking. So we conducted 12 focus groups in 6 cities throughout the state of Louisiana. And for each city, we had 1 focus group made up of current smokers and 1 focus group of former smokers who had successfully quit. I'll just call them quitters. All of the groups were made up of low-income African-American males. They were all over the age of 18, but had a diversity of ages. And they were all they had different levels of education as well. So starting off with tobacco initiation, our results tended to have not really differ very much between cities, but there were some differences between the smokers and the quitters. For tobacco initiation, however, the factors were very similar for both the smokers and the quitters. The major influences of tobacco initiation were family and friends, social norms, peer pressure, and image. So probably the biggest influence was family, specifically parents and grandparents. A lot of the smokers and the quitters grew up in families that had multi-generations of smokers, and it was really typical for them from a young age to just pick up smoking because, like this quote says, you know, people, their family members would have them light up their cigarettes, have them go to the store for them and buy them cigarettes, and they really didn't condone it very much. One smoker talked about the fact that he remembers, you know, his earliest memories of family celebrations where everybody is smoking and drinking and having fun, and from that age he just wanted to smoke because he saw everybody else around him doing it. Beyond family, the next biggest influence is probably friends and just being surrounded by peers that were smoking, so again, that peer pressure. And it just was really just a social norm, you know, whether within their households or with their friends or even in other environments like joining the army and being surrounded by smokers. It was just seen as very typical, and they eventually started smoking as well. Another big factor that led to a lot of people starting to smoke was image. So a lot of the quitters and the smokers discussed how they wanted to be seen as cool or fit in or act like a man. This person talked about wanting to do what the older guys do, so that was another big factor. In terms of tobacco use, a lot of them talked about the routines they developed around tobacco, the habits. Smokers discussed how everybody smokes, that pressure, that addiction, and the quitters focused more on choice and denial. So both the smokers and the quitters discussed how smoking had, as it became a routine, they developed other habits around their smoking as well, whether it was their morning routines, their work routines. Smokers really focused on the fact that everyone smokes. A lot of people talked about if you walk down their street and go into any house, you would see people smoking. They also discussed, you know, reasons why they continued smoking, you know, the same things that other people have already mentioned, you know, that the stress relief, the pleasure, the association between smoking and drinking, environment, peer pressure, and then ultimately for a lot of people just came down to addiction. A lot of the smokers discussed how they don't like smoking. When they're not smoking, they can't even identify anything they actually like about smoking. They don't like the smell, they hate the compulsion, but when they're smoking, they're, you know, they could just all of a sudden start smoking without even thinking about it. The quitters, on their other hand, talked a lot more about choice and you know, the choice to smoke or the choice to not smoke, but several of them also talked about this addiction, but also kind of being in denial while they were smoking about how addicted they truly were. So going into cessation, obviously this is the area where we have the biggest differences between the smokers and the quitters. One of the biggest factors that the quitters really talked about was internal motivation. So they used words like motivation, determination, willpower, and just really talking about how they ultimately, it just came down to them wanting to quit. Among the quitters, major factors that led to them quitting included life events, which might have been like the birth of a child, the death of someone who possibly had been a smoker, possibly their own health scare of some sort related to tobacco, followed by health and family. They really focused on smoking as a choice and really emphasized the importance of social supports. So again, after life events was probably the biggest factor, but after that it was family. So just as family led to a lot of people starting to smoke, for some people it also helped them to stop smoking. That family pressure or that family probing for a lot of people was really helpful. Many people also talked about how they stopped smoking because it was just becoming increasingly inconvenient, especially with policies where they can no longer smoke where they want, or for this quitter, they couldn't smoke in their house anymore, so that was enough to get them to eventually just stop. People also talked about faith and those kinds of factors as well as influencing them to quit smoking. Social support was also extremely important for many people in their smoking, the decision to stop smoking, along with financial burden of smoking, appearance, or wanting to be a role model for their children. A few people also mentioned some campaigns that they had seen, like the CDC TIP campaigns, where they saw, you know, real examples of what smoking could eventually do to them. The smokers, on the other hand, had really kind of opposite feelings, really opposing feelings between different people. On one hand, many talked about this ability to control when they quit smoking, and then on the other hand, many had this deep addiction and had this like sense of deep addictiveness and fatalism, and discussed multiple quit attempts that they had made in the past. So for those first group of people, they discussed how, you know, they could really just quit whenever they wanted. If something major happened, they could give it up. Some of them even discussed, you know, I'm not really even that addicted, or I'm not really even that big of a smoker, so I could just stop if I wanted to. But probably more common were people who really had this sense of addiction, but also fatalism, the sense of that it's pretty much impossible to quit. I really like this one. You know, why not die happy smoking a cigarette? They discussed a lot of different challenges that they had in terms of trying to quit, including having to find a real compelling reason to want to quit, being surrounded by people who are quitting as well. A few people said even major health scares had not been enough to get them to quit. One person said they had triple bypass surgery and it wasn't enough to make them stop. So So again, this is going into that same thing, that people also talked about how if you really want to quit, it's going to be a long-term battle of really pushing and really trying to find that motivation. And for some of them, they weren't sure if it was worth it or if they could really do it, if they were going to try, and everybody around them continued to smoke despite them, you know, trying to quit. In terms of cessation methods used by the quitters, the ones that are most commonly mentioned included cold turkey, cutting back, nicotine patches and substitution, and also faith. So cold turkey was the most commonly mentioned by the quitters, which was ultimately then kind of relating back, I think, to that internal motivation, then just deciding one day that they wanted to stop and stopping. It was cold turkey, in their words, probably not in ours. I'm sure it wasn't just one day. I'm sure it took them multiple attempts again. People talked about how they had quit in the past, maybe because of being in jail or working offshore or some kind of setting where they couldn't quit or where they couldn't smoke. But ultimately, you know, they started smoking again. But of those quitters that did smoke, most of them just quit cold turkey. They really didn't use any other cessation methods. Among those that did use some kind of method, it was possibly nicotine, a patch, or substituting other products, whether it was gum or other tobacco products like e-cigarettes, or some people even said like sunflower seeds, drinking water, just little things that they could do. Both quitters and smokers really were not very knowledgeable about many different cessation resources. They had to be specifically probed about the quit line, and then some people could, you know, did recall the quit line, but it wasn't something that they brought up on their own. They also mentioned, as I mentioned, the CDC the TIPS campaign. Some of them had recalled seeing that in the past. So finally, they gave some recommendations around messaging and communication for current smokers trying to quit. The quitters really emphasized the need for these messaging and communication campaigns to really target smokers that are ready to quit. And helping them find their own motivation and reasons to want to quit themselves. Both the smokers and the quitters gave a number of recommendations around media and outreach, including using social media, commercials, toll-free numbers, rap music, radio, just a variety of different things. And they also said that maybe having free giveaways of gum or the patch could be a good idea. They also really like the idea of using average people as spokespeople instead of, you know, using really famous people, just using somebody that they could relate to. Perhaps the most interesting finding from the recommendations was a lot of people really recommended what they called socializing opportunities. So I think what they meant by socializing opportunities would basically be what we would probably refer to as social support. So they were looking at different opportunities for both smokers and quitters to get together. An opportunity for the smokers to interact with, socialize, and share stories with other smokers trying to quit, and also hearing perhaps, you know, cautionary tales from smokers who have been unable to quit, but also an opportunity for quitters to kind of act as role models and provide their own success stories. Some people even said that the focus groups themselves were really helpful. One smoker really emphasized how he wished he had been invited to the quitter group. He said it would have been really nice to kind of hear their stories and learn from them. Some different ideas they had around socializing opportunities included, again, discussions like this focus group, some kind of tobacco anonymous, like alcohol anonymous, community discussions, group halls, town halls, and including churches as well. So to summarize, I think internal motivation is really key, and as I mentioned, communication and messaging really needs to help people find internal motivation and that readiness to quit. Life events were also extremely huge, and so cessation efforts really need to find a way to help people quit before that life event even happens, or if not, definitely take advantage of it and make sure that that actually compels them to quit. Kind of coming full circle, family, friends, and social norms were all huge factors in tobacco initiation, but they can also be really instrumental in either helping or kind of harming cessation as well. For people who had family and friends who were really supportive, it was really helpful for them to quit. On the other hand, being surrounded, again, by pretty much everybody in your neighborhood smoking, including everybody in your house, and that social norm of everybody smoking can make it much more difficult to quit. So for those people that don't have that social support, socializing opportunities like those that they had mentioned would be really helpful to provide them with that social support that they're lacking. So the last part I just wanted to talk about. Our findings from the focus group were used to help inform two of our own programs. The first one was a mass media campaign, which focused on two people from the CDC TIPS campaign that were specifically mentioned in the focus groups. And that was a mass media campaign that was done in the same six cities as the focus groups and was done on radio, billboards, and commercials. And then the second part that it informed was a community outreach effort of communities of color, which is kind of a grassroots effort. And it really focused, or really highlighted, the socializing opportunities that were recommended and did a lot of group discussions and one-on-one, interacting and communication. And that's it. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Hi, thanks for that was a great thanks for that. My ears particularly perked up around the ideas with Tobacco Anonymous. A relative of mine quit smoking in LA from Tobacco Anonymous or Smoking Anonymous or whatever. And I'm previous life of social worker, I'm familiar with the 12-step program pretty well, and I kept thinking about it. But reading their replies even before you mentioned it, because it seemed like that's exactly what they were asking for. And so I was wondering the thing about the 12 step program is they don't self promote. They're all about just you have to be ready to find us and seek us out. Self promotion is not what they do. So yeah, I was just wondering if that was something that is there an active tobacco network in LA or in Louisiana,
To my knowledge, there isn't, but that last point that I made around some of the community outreach efforts that we're doing, the Tobacco-Free Living does have this communities of color specific initiative, which is working in different communities. It's kind of more of a grassroots effort, and I think they are currently looking at kind of figuring out the best way to adapt some of those ideas into different communities and trying to have, community meetings and trainings and also individual training, and not necessarily counseling, but more just connecting people to support, and I think that definitely is something that they need to consider in the future.
Yes, thank you for your presentation. One thing that comes to mind, we are a company that is developing a robust tobacco cessation program through our mobile technology, and one of our providers focused a lot on stages of grief as a correlate to smoking cessation. Can you discuss anything about, perhaps in your focus group, if they talked about the relationship between tobacco cessation as stages of acceptance, denial, anger, and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think they didn't specifically refer to stages, but as you saw, people definitely use words remembering back to when they were in denial during their smoking. And a lot of people, especially the quitters, talked about, how smoking had been a choice, which is really easy to say after the fact when they've stopped. But I think there was a lot of reflection and definitely, the stages of grief or seeing other people around them. A lot of people who had lost relatives to smoking and kind of did cause them to perhaps try smoking or try quitting right after that event, while other people, it still wasn't enough. Even, their own health wasn't enough. So it wasn't specifically mentioned, but I think they did kind of talk about different components of it.
Hi, can I ask a further figure? Someone had mentioned technology in dental settings, and I wanted to get some more information about that.
Oh, yeah. I don't have a number. I can grab it from you. But I do think that in a variety of social coaching offices and dental offices, we're trying to think about ways to promote patients and, that using technology what is something that what is being successful from the perspective of the patient, and motivating and helping that patient matter. But the trouble was actually getting providers to cling on to that and improve it, part of that process, we are that process.
Thinking about patterns and habits, people get into habits and part of their study process.
Thank you. I'm at Tufts Dental School, and we're trying to get more of our dental students involved in the counseling and approaching patients on quit smoking. Any technology or any advice would be very helpful.
Well, I think there's other literature that shows that things like the breathing counseling session, again, in the dental study, has a huge impact.
Let's thank Heather. Thank you very much. We have a few minutes for questions. I'd like to just sum up a few things. But when we think about person, place, and time, just think about the things we heard about this morning that were really very creative and really wonderful. Who do the interventions work with? So we talked about buddies being important in Baltimore, and African-Americans in Louisiana, the general population data we heard about, people in Maine, even our own disciplines here are different. And it's very important for us when we bring those perspectives. The classification of smoking and how that affects a person. And we didn't hear a lot about e-cigarettes or hookah smoking until just recently. And the difference in definitions of quit attempts. And the difference about addiction and also dependence, and using average people and social opportunities. Those are really important when we consider the person. And qualitative and quantitative. The place, does it matter in Maine or in Louisiana or around the United States, in Baltimore, in doctor's offices or in dentist's offices, in New England? The place that you can smoke, we heard about. If you could change just one thing and having it being really excited about being in a focus group, a place like that, or a town hall, or a church, those are places that we've heard about today. And we talk about time, the duration of an attempt. What does it mean to stop smoking? For how long? Mondays, the importance of a Monday. And the flight schedule versus a burst, a health call line. How long those things take, or cold turkey, quickly stopping instead of stopping over time. So those are all things that we heard about this morning with these wonderful speakers. And I want to give them all another opportunity to answer questions if you have any, but also let's give them thanks for presenting their work today.